Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello. Wow. Hi, Anna. I'm Shireen.
Hi, Shireen. Nice to meet you.
That was not on purpose. But y'all, we have a really amazing episode today. Again, a connect guest through Lauren Pacell, who is an angel.
Yeah, great connection. We have a really wonderful person here. We have the CEO of the Matriarch Digital, keep it young, media group. Now I know you'll understand that reference later in the episode, who creates a lot of great spaces for women and people of color in podcasting. So we are joined today by Twyla Dang. You can say hi.
Hi.
Sorry, we didn't give you any warning.
There she is. She's just very wise and insightful, and we're so glad that she's here on the show, but also like in the podcasting space. Y'all are going to fall in love with her, so stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna. Wow.
How's it going?
I think I always start with hi, Anna, and then wow. I just realized that. But I feel like I just talked to you, and it's because we just talked. We had another recording earlier on this like spooky podcast, like the least haunted podcast. And so we're talking all day today, you and I.
It was a spooky show for Halloween, which is this week. Do you have a costume?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I don't either.
I wish I was someone that could have that much mental space and energy, but I'm not. So if I do go to some parties, I think I'm just going to dress up as like a safari person because that's just how I dress now. So like the green hat, shorts, Hawaiian shirt or something, or like safari shirt.
A safari person.
Yeah, safari person. So it's all spooky, but it's something.
Oh no, my Siri's turning on because I said I see. Oh gosh. Also, my dad keeps sending, I have to tell my dad to stop texting me. Sorry. He's sending me photos of dogs like in shopping carts.
Oh my God. That's good content. Jesus.
Hold on. I'm telling him, Dad, I'm recording. Please stop texting.
Do you have a costume?
No. I have no energy for anything anymore.
Same.
But
same.
I will eat candy.
Yes. I'm going to the parties so I can eat. That is the only reason. I want to eat things all the time.
Okay.
But yeah.
We should bring our guest in.
Please. I want this to end. I want this ramble of mine to please end. Hello. Yes. Let's bring her in.
So we have a guest today that unsurprisingly was brought to us by one of our wonderful guest contributors and also just, I guess, friend of the pod, Lauren Pacell, who I feel like we talk about Lauren every time.
Every other episode is a guest that she recommends. So very thankful that she is so good at this connecting over the internet thing because her guests are always mwah, chef's kiss.
So this guest, we're very excited to have her because she's actually like really doing something for podcasting that matters and doing something for people of color that matters. But she is the CEO of the Matriarch Digital Media Group, which is a woman-centered, woman-focused media company. Look, I mean, they make podcasts and they give a shit. She also works as a producer for, this is actually funny because when I read this, I don't know why, but it made me laugh. But NPR News, very, very similar to NPR News, but based in Minnesota. I love it. I don't know why. When I read it originally, I was like, now that's genius. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we have Twyla Dang with us. Welcome.
Hi, ladies.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. So can you tell us how you met Lauren?
Lauren and I met in person for the first time at Podcast Movement, which is my first real like go outside, big girl activity post-pandemic.
What year was this?
Honestly, just last August.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
So we knew of each other on the internets for like the entirety of the year of the pandemic when everybody was kind of like cloistered in their houses.
Right.
We all met in places like Clubhouse and Twitter Spaces. And I do a thing called Women in Podcasting where I basically open up the floor and answer anybody's questions that they have for a couple hours once a month. And so we kind of were interacting in there. And then Jalika Lantigua has a group called Podcasting Seriously on Clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And once you've met her and you've answered a question in her group, you're never allowed to come into her group and not get pulled on stage. So Lauren and I have been on stage together many times helping to answer people's podcasting questions and service and help questions. So,
wow.
Wow, that's cool.
That's really cool.
That was the podcast movement in Nashville, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That was one I chose not to go to. I wasn't ready.
You know what? I wasn't either, but I got asked to come and speak. And,
And that's hard to turn down. That's hard to turn down.
Yeah, it snowballed. I'd always said I wasn't going to go unless I got asked to speak. And then I got asked to speak three times. And I was like, okay, the sign. I'm going to go.
Yeah, you manifested that.
Yeah,
hardcore.
I really did.
Yeah.
And I will say this. I wasn't ready either. And I did act like a full tilt, like I was in Contagion with the suit and don't touch me. And it's where you're too close. And it was a much smaller crowd. So I think it's the only reason why I could tolerate it. Cause the crowd, the normal podcast movement crowd was pretty small. And I pretty much turned my hotel room into sanctified space. Like don't cross the threshold. It's fine.
I love that.
We've been to a few, we've went to the Philadelphia one and then
Orlando.
Orlando.
Yeah. Philadelphia, Orlando. Those are the ones that I've been to. I haven't been to anything else. I think you went once with iHeart, right?
God, I don't know. I feel like I've been to 100 of these conferences in my life.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So
they're fun.
I just can't make, I usually can't bring myself to do it.
I would only go because my company would be like, you have to go and acknowledge that you're a woman of color in podcasting, which was always a lot.
Yeah.
Then we started to be like, we're not doing it unless we're doing, we're only talking about being a woman in podcasting.
Or like every panel was just like about being not white and a woman. And that just like defeats the purpose.
I don't feel like I'm just a woman of color. I mean, if you're going to keep putting me in that category, like I would like to just talk about being a person in podcasting at this point.
Yeah.
That's when I feel like we're actually making progress.
Yeah. And for me, I consider myself like non-binary. So it's like, I don't know. There's like a lot of things that I got triggered by, but especially just like seeing the other conferences that were popular, like about like microphones and equipment and stuff. And they were all white dudes, you know, like women use equipment too. Like,
It's a constant that I'm sort of fighting in the industry is the idea of, you know, if you hold space for other people, guess what happens? This whole thing expands. We all have more opportunities and y'all have to stop pretending like what was convenient for you in the past or what you've just gotten used to is okay to be the status quo. But it's also an argument we keep having, which is you're not really going to be able to get people to invest in something that feels like medicine to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so increasingly, I am less inclined to be worried about how to help them expand their systems and how to just go over here and build what we need and show up. Because when I show up and I hold weight with the thing that I've built. I don't necessarily need you to carve out space for me. That space isn't meant for me. I'm going to start building my own spaces.
It's like pretend diversity to, in your attempt to diversify, you just make another subsection where all those diverse people go instead of incorporating them into the actual space itself. You know,
exactly. But that requires deeper thought than how to check a box, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that requires, I get a lot of people asking me like, oh, how can I like, is this something that I can do or is this something that's just reserved for other people to do? Or, you know, do we just need to sit back and let people of color take the lead? And I say the same thing. Everybody has power. Everybody has individual power. How are you using yours? I say, listen, in my world, I run a business and I also have a full-time job. So I essentially have two full-time jobs. And at any given time, what I make sure to do is use my time to the best of my ability to support what I say I believe in. So if I'm mentoring people, it's not enough to give them career advice and, you know, give them the light punch in the arm and go, good luck, kid. It's, hey, give me a copy of your resume. Let me take a look at it. Hey, let's reorganize this resume. So it works better for you. And then it's when somebody comes to me and says, hey, I'm looking for somebody, because now I know enough people that I occasionally get asked, do you have somebody that'd be good for a job? I now have a roster of people I can go to. And I don't just send resumes. I contact you and say, hey, I heard about this really cool job. Can I send them your resume? because that's what I'm supposed to be doing. That's, it takes very, very little effort on my part to move somebody forward. It's, you know, it's the kind of stuff that, you know, when I'm talking to Jaleka and she says, hey, I want you just doing your own thing in a year. How do we get you there? Let's talk about that plan. And it's not just me saying, well, one day, it's me saying, I'm not sure. And having her as someone who's, you know, a good 5 years ahead of me in terms of progress, being able to say, well, I had to do this and I needed to do this and you need to start doing this.
Yeah.
That's important. We all have to start doing that work. I mean, we know how people are hired. We know how systems are built. We know how the Whisper networks work. We got to create our own stuff. Mm-hmm. And we have to be pretty much beholden to the idea that we have to be building these kind of networks too. And we have to be transparent about the way that we do things. And we have to put, you know, the effort and the energy into, you know, making the industry that we actually want to see. I'm no longer waiting for somebody to show up to save me because no one's going to do that. I got to save myself. I'm the hero of my story. So,
wow. That was beautiful to listen to, first of all. Thank you for saying all of those things that we all agree with. But you're right. I think, like, especially those like tangible things that can make a person's, that can make a difference. Like, I can get as much career advice as possible. It doesn't actually help me in a real way, you know, but like actually investing in someone and telling them the honesty of how you got there, I think it's so crucial. And I think we mentioned this earlier before we recorded as far as Lauren goes, but it's the same context of like, when you enter a space and you've opened the door to something, you keep it open for others and you figure out how to let them in versus shut it behind you, you know?
Exactly.
I always think like, it's like I've scammed everyone. How did I get this far? And it's like, well, I've gotten this far. I might as well just like get everyone else in while I can too, if they're going to fall for it.
But that's the thing we all say too. I mean, and particularly as, you know, as women, as people of color, you know, in fields like this, we don't always understand how to own and hold what we've been able to accomplish in these spaces. I mean, for the first years of my business, I never even said I was a business owner. I just said, somebody would say, what do you do? I say, I do a thing. And I'm like, it's not a thing. And then I had someone that I love and trust who pulled me aside and said, listen, I need you to do something. I need you to pick a title. And she's like, and I don't care what title it is. You pick what's comfortable for you, but you have to pick something that allows these other people in these traditional structures to understand that you're here and you're doing something. Yeah. Put it in the language they understand. And then when they start talking to you, they'll put it all together. Mm-hmm. And that was a little eye opening for me because I didn't understand I was doing that. And I didn't understand why I was doing that. And then I was like, no, I get it. I mean, I've been conditioned my entire life to not be too big, not to be too loud, not to hold too much space, not to get in people's way. And now I'm like, well, listen, the problem y'all all have now is I'm in my 40s solid and I'm pretty well fearless. And I actually made human beings. You can't tell me I'm not great. So now the rest of it is just y'all get a chance to catch up to me.
Yeah. Great. Love that. Also deeply relate to how subtle and terrible imposter syndrome is. It's just something you have to work on in like in every field. Like you just have to believe that you're worth being there and worth calling yourself something that maybe you didn't think was yours, but you are that thing. Like whether it's like filmmaking, podcasting, CEO, anything, you know. Let's go back a little bit and talk about how you ended up getting here and becoming so wise. Where did you grow up and where were you born?
So I was born in Detroit, Michigan. I lived there till I was 4. My dad was an auto worker. And Detroit at the time that we lived there was starting to go into the decline. So we wound up leaving there. And my mom was from Pennsylvania. So we went back to Pennsylvania. My mom's born and raised in Pittsburgh. So we were in Pittsburgh from the time I was 4 till about 11 or so. My dad was a steel worker. And so if you know...
That's the city.
If you know the industry, you know we were right smack in the middle of the death of that industry. Mm-hmm. And my dad lost his job. And so he wound up migrating south, like a lot of the steelworkers did, and wound up in Virginia. He was down there for a couple of years, saved up to get us a house. And then we followed and I spent the rest of my youth in Virginia. So the thing that usually becomes top of mind to people is I don't have an accent because I don't. And that's because we moved around a lot when I was a kid. So when we lived in Pittsburgh, we moved several times. I went to like 4 elementary schools, 2 middle schools, 1 high school. And the thing is, you make yourself an easy target really fast. So I had to learn how to drop accents from about the time I was 7. And I was pretty determined to figure out how to talk in a neutral way, but I didn't understand at that age what I was doing. I was just trying to find someone who sounds normal all the time. And so I started to mimic broadcasters on television. So quite literally the speaking voice I have now is Peter Jennings' speaking voice, because that was the voice I sort of connected to. And, you know, you could see the news anywhere you went. So when I left Detroit and got to, you know, Pennsylvania, I had a little bit of like a flat Michigan accent. By the time we left Pittsburgh, I had the full tilt, like Pittsburgh, you know, the yens and the super wide speak. By the time I left Virginia, I had full on Southern twang. You know, it was like, hi, I'm Twyla, you know, the whole kit. But I knew anytime I got somewhere, the second somebody said, you know, you talk funny, within 24 hours, I didn't anymore.
Wow.
And it's still like that now, because I've been in Minnesota for like almost 30 years and I should have a full tilt like Minnesota accent. I do not.
Wow. That's power of acclimation and like will.
The power of not wanting to get picked on by bullies.
Exactly.
I will fit in very quickly.
And I think a lot of marginalized communities could relate to that.
Now, mind you, the voice was the most normal thing about me, because I was just a deeply weird kid outside of that. So I had to have something that just seemed on the surface pretty normal.
Assimilation is so, it's the most common thing people, like, I feel like I've had this conversation so many times. Remember earlier we were talking about how, like, someone we were talking to said that they never, their family never learned German because the great grandparent who immigrated was like, no, we need to assimilate. We're not speaking any other language. And I was talking to a family friend recently who was like, you know, I wish I learned Farsi, but my dad kind of like refused to teach me because he was so ashamed of his own accent that he like wanted to just fit in so badly. And it's like, it's just the common denominator when you are othered is to just force your way into fitting in, because that's the only way to like survive from like literal bullying from like teens to adults to jobs. Like everyone wants way to make much. You feel othered.
Now, mind you, I get to have sort of both experiences. I mean, my last name is Dang. So obviously I married that name. It's not mine, but I'm keeping it. Mm-hmm. But my husband moved here from Vietnam when he was 4 and fully assimilated, you know, like just the, you know, speaks with a flawless American accent, does not speak accented at all. Speaks a little Vietnamese, but not more than like childhood level Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. But his mom is here. And all of the rest of his family. And his mom has been here since the, you know, late 70s, early 80s. And she still speaks very fluent Vietnamese. They, you know, she speaks it every day in her house, has never like dropped accent, has, you know, still has a pretty effectively the same accent she had since she came here. It's one of the things I admire about her, that she's held and been able to hold so deeply onto her culture. And I also find it deeply frustrating when people underestimate her, because I'm like, just because she's like 4'9" and speaks with a heavy accent doesn't mean that she's not one of the most determined, strong, diligent, amazing humans I've ever met. I mean, she basically had to come here and start all over again. Her college degree meant nothing when she came here. She worked 3 jobs to be able to provide for her son and her daughter. She went back to school, got a degree, basically sponsored every family member that wanted to come here to the States, because you need a sponsor to do that. Mm-hmm. And she did all of this without, you know, flawlessly, without ever skipping a beat, without ever expecting a thank you in return. That's who she is. And I'm really happy that my kids get to have that experience with her and that they get to experience her in the way that she is in full, and not in any sort of like way that is rooted in any kind of shame or rooted in her like trying to push down or push back on their very proud history and their very proud experience. I think the only regret I have is that they were raised with the American mom, so my kids don't speak Vietnamese because I don't speak it. But I have 2 nephews and a niece who understand it. I wish my kids had that. I wish I had more of a brain to be able to wrap around that at the time that I needed it. I really only know how to fuss at my children in Vietnamese, and that's not helpful to anybody.
Yeah. I mean, it's never too late if they were interested, you know, like to, I think it would come naturally to them more so than other kids. But to your point, something that really bothers me when it comes to my parents or family members or is anyone like a professor with an accent around anything, some people just assume like someone with an accent is dumb or not smart, when really they're smarter than the majority of people, because they're talking to you in their, and not their first language. Like, that takes a lot to have, like, to do a lecture in a language that isn't yours, or to just go throughout the world with that reality. It just really makes me mad whenever people would make fun of my parents or, like, anyone with an accent. I got so irritated because I was like, they're so much smarter than you. Mm-hmm. You need to shut up.
Yeah, that's, fortunately or unfortunately for my family, I am that person who is just like, oh, you got something to say? Because I'm a don't start none, won't be none kind of gal. Mm-hmm. So I happily and easily, you know, I'm the first person to go, I know you don't know this because you're not paying attention, but she's with me. And what mm-hmm. we're not doing is that. And I'm really proud that that is something my children have picked up from me. We have a very specific philosophy of not punching down in this family. And so that means we don't let, you know, anybody, if we're out in the world and we see somebody that's getting messed with and they don't match up, they're not able to stand up for themselves in that way. I always tell my kids, within reason, we don't let that happen. And if it's beyond reason, then we get crafty and make sure it stops.
I love that. Let's get into more. But first, let's take our first commercial break. We'll be right back.
And we are back with Twyla. Yeah, before the break, we were talking kind of about how people with accents can be underestimated. I mean, I feel like I've lived that my whole life with my own parents. People always tell me, like, when did your dad immigrate here? And I'm like, he came here when he was 24. He's been in America longer than he ever lived in Iran. And yes, he still has a thick accent because he chooses to have, he doesn't care. He just wants to, you know, speak in Farsi and hang out with his friends who are also Persian, and he's not going to do anything about it because why does he need to? And also, he's an engineer. Guess what? He moved to this country, learned to speak English, went to college in a language that he didn't fully know and got a degree and continued to get degrees and then built a career. It's so true of, like, he did what he had to do. It doesn't make mm-hmm. him any less anything because he has an accent. But in this country, people are quick. They're quick to assume, which is always a bummer.
And they always do punch down. You're right. And they're like the butt of every joke. Like, even in, like, when you look back on comedy or films or whatever, there's always something, not always, but there's a lot of references like making fun of people that have accents that are not white or whatever. And it's like been ingrained in us that, like, being white is normal and anything that strays from that is strange, you know? Yeah,
absolutely.
And that is so fucked up. Objectively just fucked up. I hate that so much, but there's a reason why people think it's okay to punch down or to look down on other cultures or languages or accents, because that's what they were raised to think was inferior. And it's just
It's exceptionalism. I mean, and we see that exceptionalism play itself out everywhere. I mean, we see it played out in our industry all the time. When, you know, when people tell me, oh, well, I'd like to hire more, you know, people of color for my team, but I just can't really find qualified people. You know, when we use technology and qualifiers to keep people out of our industry or out of positions in our industry, you know, whether it's, do you know Pro Tools, or you need to have five, like, I love when I see a job description that says you need 7 to 10 years of experience. Yeah. When
who the fuck is that? I always see that.
Yeah, modern podcasting doesn't have a bench of 7 to 10 years of podcasting experience. It's not even a possibility. So it's like, come on. Like, this is, it's like, just do me a favor. Just say you want who you want. Just say you want to hire your friends. That's easy. That's easy enough.
That's going to end up being who it is, to be honest. That, you know,
well, and that's exactly how it's designed. And that's why I'm constantly saying, listen, I'm going to call a thing a thing. This job description is crap. You know, the standard that you have for this, you know, particular thing to work at this company or work within this part of the industry is crap. All this is about is creating opportunities. You can create, you have to train anybody you bring into a job. It's not difficult to train somebody. It's not difficult to take the time to mentor someone or to bring somebody up to speed. What you're doing is designing systems that keep everything around you looking like what feels familiar to you. And often in our industry, that is white and middle-aged and male. Mm-hmm. And listen, I get how easy it is to just, why would you want to rock the boat? I get it. Why would you want to change things when you're already sitting at the top of the pyramid? My job is to make sure I'm pointing out that it's not okay for you to sit there at the top of the pyramid like that. And while you're sitting there and the rest of the space is open, I'm going to do my very best to keep filling in those spaces until we're at the point where we're looking you dead in the eye at the top of the pyramid.
Yeah. Well, I just wish every person that had power what thought like you. Like, it would just change every industry to have someone that, like, recognizes, like, you have time to train someone. You're not suddenly, like, the busiest person in the world because you have success. It's just, wow, you give me some hope for the future, truly.
Well, I'm glad I do. I feel optimistic because I know that there are ways for this to happen, and I'm living proof of it. I mean, up until I started this company, I stayed at home with kids for 12 years. I was effectively completely out of the workforce. I was as discounted as you could get. I couldn't even get a part-time job at Starbucks before I got into audio. So I know what it takes to, like, climb up out of this. And because I sat so far at the margin and on the outside of it looking in, I can see all the missed opportunities. Sometimes I really get frustrated and go, like, why am I the only one who can see this? But now I understand that part of me being able to see it very clearly is a gift. And the thing you should be doing with your gifts are utilizing them. So now I understand, you know, when I have opportunities like this, or if I'm in a room, or if I'm asked to be a part of a panel, or I'm asked to have coffee with somebody, my job is to make sure that I'm being clear on that. And if you're asking, I'm telling. Like, I'm not doing the, oh, somebody else probably has something to say. Nope, you asked me. I'm going to tell you. And even now holding, you know, making sure to hold weight for, if you want actual practical advice and steps on how to get to these places, you need to start paying for that. Because as a Black woman, I do a lot of work for the greater good. I just do. And it's a part of, it's basically built in my DNA to, you know, put what would serve me best to the side often to make sure that the greater good is covered. But that is rigor. That is actual, like, intellectual rigor and work and research and time and energy put into how to make this better. If you're sitting on a pile of money at one of these large corporations or even one of these large indies and you think, oh, this is good, we should be doing this, but you want me to just tell you over coffee how to do it, come on, you can kick rocks. You know better than that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your time is of value, so is mine.
Yeah, 100%. People don't understand that. Can we get into how you ended up going into the audio space? Yeah. Like, tell us about that time in your life where you had kids at home and you were trying, like, you obviously made some type of transition professionally, right? So
I wouldn't call it a transition. There's an expression where they say luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And I probably had about the luckiest break you were ever going to get. I had a group of girlfriends that were all moms. We were all stay-at-home moms together. Everybody else was heading back to the workforce because they all had, like, two kids, and I happened to have the bonus kid. So I was kind of staying behind while everybody was kind of going back out into the world. And I was at this lunch and I made a joke at the table. I said, hey, I'm so glad I know all these professional women because the only thing I'm good at is talking and nobody pays me to do that. And we laughed and we just kept going. And a couple of weeks later, one of the women at the lunch, who I always name check because she changed my life, her name is Alexis Thompson. She's one of my closest friends and she works in the radio industry. She called and said, hey, you made that joke at lunch. And I honestly thought I had offended her because she's a radio host. And I was like, oh, I mean, I was just messing around. She goes, no, seriously, I didn't think it was funny because I think you should meet my boss. I think you'd be good at this.
Oh my God.
And she introduced me to the program director at the radio station, which was a talk radio station here in the Twin Cities. It still exists. It's called My Talk 107.1. She introduced me to the program director. And within 7 months, I was on the air and I was hosting a show on the weekend.
Wow. God bless that woman.
Yeah. She's one of my favorite humans. And I always tell her, you changed the trajectory of my life because you saw something in me I didn't see in myself.
Wow.
And so I got a weekend show and it was 2 hours live radio. I had never done anything like it in my life. Didn't go to school for this. Had no background. Had two things working in my favor. One, I'm very good at talking. And two, my younger sister went to school for broadcasting. So the first show on the air, she was listening online and called my phone at the first commercial break and was like, okay, you're freaking out. Calm down. Just talk. like you're whispering, like you're a librarian. You don't talk like that. And then she said, take the phone into the producer's booth. And I was like, what? And she goes, just do it. So I go over there and I'm like, my sister wants to talk to you. And she's like, you need to boost her mic all the way up because she'll calm down, but she's not going to get it today. And she's nervous. And she's like whispering. And so we got through the first show and I immediately said, one of two things is going to happen. I'm going to have this great story about the time I worked in radio and got fired, or I'm going to figure it out. And the way I figure things out is I'm a hanger out and ask questions. So it was Saturday afternoon. So I just started like hanging out and asking the producers, like, what do these buttons do? And I started asking like the guys who worked at the talk sports station, like the older guys, like, what do you guys do? Like, how does this all work? And then I would ask Alexis, like, hey, I want to know how to put a show together. Like, how do I do a proper show grid? And she would show me the show grid. And so in a 2-hour show on a show grid, you only need 3 items to talk about per segment. Each segment's about 15 minutes long. So if you really think about it, it's, you know, it's something like 15 to 18, you know, segments per hour. You'll probably get to maybe 12 of them. I was coming in every week and was 75.
Wow.
Like smooth. Like I was ultra producing this thing, but it was paying off because I was getting chops underneath me. And then I had a producer came in and he, you know, he was like the old guy. Like, you know, sometimes they hired those old like engineer technician guys to just come in and run the board. And he had asked me one day, he's like, you seem to be really into this. And I said, yeah, I just don't want to be bad at it. And he goes, well, you know, you kind of got to be bad at first. Nobody tells you you're bad because you'll get in your head about it. But yeah. And I was like, well, how do I get better? And he goes, well, I'll break down the show with you. And for the next few months, we would record a show on Saturday. And on Sunday, we would go through it minute by minute.
Wow.
And he would say, okay, so you can't, like, you're taking too long to get to the segment. And then, or, you know, or he would say, like, if you're doing an interview, just remember, they need the platform as much as you. So act like you've been here before. Like, mm-hmm. Don't cede control to them. Hey, when you get a caller, you cannot give a caller the open air. They just think it's their moment. Mm. You gotta like give them a yes or is make a yes or no questions. Is it? It's red or blue, dog or cat. Don't say, what do you think? Because then they're just gonna go bonkers. And you know, little by little, I got more confident in it. And the more confident I got, the more opportunities I got to, you know, host things and to substitute for the weekday shows and work with the sales department and, you know, start learning how to do that. But the thing you always learn about major media companies, and I had to learn over time not to take it personally, because it's not about you. It's about what they envision in the chair at any time. So the station was great, but they kept trying to skew younger. They wanted 18 to 22 year olds. And I was a 40-year-old black mom of 3 from the suburbs. I wasn't going to speak to their demo. So they weren't ever interested in giving me, you know, like a real shot or a real opportunity or a weekday gig. And once I started to figure that out, it was like, okay, well, this is really cool. This was a cool run. This was a great one. Maybe I should go try to do something else. And right at that same moment, the corporation that owned my radio station bought 30% of Podcast One. And so all of a sudden I was getting all this paperwork in front of me about podcasting, what their aspirations were and how it works and what's available. And I had honestly never even engaged with a podcast until then, but I was going through it and kind of absorbing things and just going, I think I could do this. And then at the same time, I was having a thought that, hey, I could do this. And you guys are like, this is an opportunity here. Like, you should be talking to my age group. You shouldn't just be talking to 18-year-olds. My age group has like money and confidence, and we just want to be talked to like we're not broken. Like, that would be great. And so I started sort of soapboxing to everybody, like, you know what we deserve? We deserve this. And I happened to soapbox in front of a particular gentleman one night. He was one of the people that we hosted a show for. And when I got off my soapbox, I was like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm just ranting. I just think it'd be really cool if something like that existed, that talked to women, you know, yeah, like they make sense and treats them with respect and has a good time with them. And he goes, I actually think that's a fantastic idea. And if you're serious, I'd happily invest in it.
Wow. You've met some angel people.
Honestly, I went home that night and tried to prove it didn't need to exist. I tried to Google my way out of it. So I Googled Women's Podcast Network in 2015, 2016. Nothing came up because it didn't really, that concept didn't exist yet. And then I thought, well, I mean, what would I call it? And I said, okay, well, I like to boss everybody around. I'd call it Matriarch. So I typed in Matriarch and it came up with a closed restaurant in DC and a public relations firm in like South Africa. And even to this minute, I've only ever twice Googled something where the page came up almost blank. And those are the 2 times in the same night. And I thought, this is a sign. And then I said, well, it can't just be called Matriarch. That sounds kind of old fashioned. And I got to sound younger than that if I'm going to compete in all of this. I got to like jazz it up a little bit. Okay, well, like digital. I'll call it Matriarch Digital Media. Let's see. Website available. Social media handles available. Everything was available. I was like, okay, doesn't get more specific than this. So we took 7 months to negotiate, you know, seed money and a contract. And I'll tell you, I knew so little about business that the only thing I asked for was like 15 grand. I only asked for enough money to buy equipment. I didn't even ask for enough money to pay myself. And then I said, okay, well, I'm off to the races. So I called every single person I knew, not just people in audio or in radio, just everybody I knew that I thought was talented. Everybody that I knew, you know, like that was like me, like you should deserve a shot. It was like 40 people. And I told them I have a crazy idea. I'd like to try to build something for women. And if it works, we could change the way the world talks to and talks about women and girls. And if it doesn't, we'll have this awesome story about the time we blew 15 grand trying to start a business. And nobody told me no. So we spent a year making two podcasts. And back then, this was before seasons was a real thing. So we were making week to week shows, but we knew we wanted to do evergreen content. So we spent a year manufacturing 80 episodes for two shows. And the following year, we started to release them. And we've been building on top of that ever since. We're up to 8 shows now in the world. We've got another couple in the hopper that need to come out. Now we make shows for other people. If you had told me even 5 years ago that I would actually be recruited by American Public Media to make something for them, I would have said, you're bonkers. But here I am making podcasts for them. And now I actually, my actual job every day is to make audio, is to make podcasts, which is pretty remarkable.
It's wow. Really fucking sick.
How everything kind of fell in place. That's amazing.
Yeah. I will say I am now a firm believer that when you are on your actual purpose, somehow the universe just shifts to make, you know, to make things show up for you. I'm absolutely a reformed pessimist. And I did not believe that, you know, that whole, like, if you find a job you love, you'll never work a day in your life. I thought that was such crap.
I want to be you so bad right now because I'm still in that phase where I'm just like a pessimist black hole. So maybe one day I'll be proven wrong.
Well, I'll tell you two things that actually shifted it for me. One, I had kids and I kind of decided that the only way my kids are going to see a different world is if I modeled it for them. I can't tell them, I have to live it. So, you know, I got to choose joy. I got to choose how to change circumstance. Like if I model it for them, they'll be able to see something in the world. And that might work out for all of us. And then when the business started, it just became, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to give the very best I can on any given day. And I have to understand that that means it's, you know, some days it's going to be great. Some days it's going to be, I did my best. Before I go to bed every night, I ask myself, did you do the best you could do today? And if the answer is yes, that's great. And if the answer is no, I try to have some grace with myself and go, well, girl, we'll get after it tomorrow. Go to bed. You know, like that's all we can do. I mean, my life is significantly different than it was.
Yeah. That's amazing. Let's take our last break and we will return very shortly. Don't go anywhere.
And we are back.
You're so wise. I could listen to you talk forever.
Well, bless you. I always say the wisdom came from my kids because I was a good old-fashioned knucklehead before they came along. I enjoyed being self-centered.
I got to figure out something else because I don't want to have kids. So I have to figure out something else that will have my epiphany.
Here's the thing. You have to figure out what is the thing that drives you to be the best version of yourself. Hmm. Is it the people that you care for? Is it something that you feel is bigger than yourself? Because I didn't want to have kids either. I had kids because, and my kids know this. I'm super honest about it. I had kids because my husband was such a good human and he was so good with kids. It was like, this man can't not have kids.
Yeah.
And even while I was pregnant, I was like, well, y'all better make some plans because when it gets here, I don't know what you're going to do with it. And then I just got super lucky. Like when I had him, I looked him in the face and like a little button in the back of my head was just like, this is the coolest shit you're ever going to do in your whole life. And I was just like, I love him. This is great.
Wow.
And because I didn't have any expectations on what kind of parent I was going to be, because I never dreamt it for myself, I didn't have any rules. Mm-hmm. So I got to be a completely free and open person nurturing other human beings. So I didn't have that like, well, good moms do this or moms. I didn't have any of that. It was like I could follow my own arrow.
Yeah. That's an interesting way to think about it. Like what motivates you to be a best version of yourself? I got a lot to think about.
Well, I've had a minute. I always tell people, don't put pressure on yourself. It took me a minute to get here. I'm 47. So it took me a hot minute to, you know, sort of feel grounded in my own bones, you know, as it were. And to be honest, every single day, I think I'm still getting there. And then I look at my kids. I have a 17-year-old daughter who will absolutely run this planet because she's basically me at but with the confidence I have now and in her 17-year-old body. And I'm just like, damn, like, wowzers, how are we doing this?
That's awesome.
It's a gift. My mother wished one thing on me when she told me one day, she said, if you have kids, I hope you get you what you are times three. And well, I went, okay. And then I thought that meant three children, which I have, but that's not what she meant. she meant me.
Yeah. Instill in them what is so present in you. That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think she meant it more as a hex at the time because I was a lot as a kid. But it's circling back around the island pretty nicely.
I think it's a good thing. It's for better or for worse, you know.
Classic mother hex.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I've already said it to her probably twice. I just hope you get what you are times three. Thanks.
I know you did a project where you did like a big study.
Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of it. We're still doing
okay,
it.
Okay. So can you tell us a little about your study? I know it's about kind of people of color in podcasting.
We had the idea for it around the time of the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
And then the pandemic itself kind of opened the door to like, let's actually see if we can have this conversation. And at the time I was sort of saying, let's figure out how to do this. And I did not know how to engineer a study. So I was really trying to like, can we do it a Google sheet? Can we do it like Google survey? I was pretty jank when I started, but we got lucky enough that the Knight Foundation, who I had been working as a part of a cohort with, said, you know, we'd like to support your work. What can we do? And I was like, I have this study I'd like to do. And so they gave me some money and we started to design a study that would help us figure out what's really going on with BIPOC women in podcasting. Now, mind you, BIPOC isn't my favorite term, but we needed a term that could encompass everyone that we were trying to talk to. We realized when we started to do the research that we kind of needed a landscape because no one had really ever asked who's working in the industry. We ask who's listening. We ask who engages with podcasts. We ask what people who listen to podcasts consume or what they spend their money on. And sometimes we even ask about like job titles, but we don't ask about who's overall working and getting a full landscape. Mm-hmm. So I was really fortunate that when the study came up within sort of my network of friends and colleagues, I somehow know many Black female PhDs in data science. And one woman came on board, Brandeis Marshall, and she helped bring together a team. So we had a team of five Black women doing this study, two of which were PhDs, one with masters, and then our team at Matriarch all came together to do this. And we started with a full tilt landscape study. We set up a series of questions and we tried to get as many people, not just BIPOC women, but anyone who worked in the audio industry to fill it out and tell us everything from what you do for a living, you know, what you do with the audio industry, what kind of roles you've held, what the responsibilities are, those roles, where are you located, what's your pay scale, what are your pain points? We wanted to try to get a comprehensive view of who's doing the work and how the work is coming across. Mm-hmm. And the results we got were really surprising, at least to me. I would say the traditional stuff wasn't surprising. The idea of, you know, like, geographically, we knew people would fall within a certain range of places. Those all bore out. We saw the New York, the Los Angeles, the Atlantas, you know, the DCs.
Yeah.
We actually got a pretty nice contingent from outside the United States, which is a thread I'd like to follow up on again later. I think the real surprise came when we started asking about the pain point. You know, like, mm-hmm. What's the difficulty? What are your struggles? All of the BIPOC participants were taught, had real tangible examples of, you know, it's hard when you can't afford the equipment. It's hard when you aren't trained to do certain things and you have to know those things to be able to advance. It's hard to be the only member of an all-white team. It's, you know, we heard a lot of those kind of things that we knew were echoes that we had all experienced. What floored me is when we asked what were the difficulties to our white participants, they all said the same thing. And I mean, almost all of them said the same thing. It's really hard to get listeners.
Oh, wow. Such a contrast.
Yeah. I mean, literally, it's hard to get listeners. How do we increase our audience? So that tells you a lot up front. Mm-hmm. Because if you've got a whole community of people over here saying it's hard to do the work because of the environment, and then the people over here who would actually have real tangible impact on that environment who are saying, oh, that's not a problem for us. We just need to know how to get more people to listen to our shows. Where do you go? Where do you go? We're writing the actual paper right now. We're doing a white paper and a real research report, one to turn into the Knight Foundation and two for publication. And it's the thing that sort of has been rattling around in my head for 4 months, which is even I didn't understand how disconnected the, as a representative sample, the white community members within our industry, how disconnected they were to understanding this.
Right.
How disconnected they were. I mean, and some were sympathetic. Some were like, oh, I know it's probably difficult for somebody else, but it ain't for me. I just need to know how to get listeners. And it's like,
so narrow-minded.
Oh, wow. I genuinely think from the way that some of the languaging was done, I think it's coming from a deeply ignorant place, mm-hmm. but it's an ignorant place that has been forged out of the permission to not have to engage with anything that's difficult for you. When the world is engineered in your favor, or the industry is engineered in your favor, you don't have to look around to see how difficult it is. Because when you look around, you're surrounded by, you know, mirrors of yourself, mm-hmm. right? So if I'm on the other side of the wall, or I'm, you know, on the rung below or three rungs below saying, I just need this, you know, like I need help with this. And you're like, well, it wasn't hard for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it makes it easier to like have this confirmation bias of, you know, exceptionalism and individualism. Like, well, I learned it. Well, no, you are the cousin of so-and-so who let you tinker around with his Pro Tools on his old computer he gave you.
Yeah.
And then you got a job because he you know his fraternity brother and he made a call for you, right?
Yeah.
You're thinking exceptionalism. I earned a position. No, exceptionalism. You exception. You got a leg up, you know, a very specific leg up that I didn't get. I have absolutely run into this at American Public Media. And it's not a reflection of bad people. It's just a reflection of the environment. When people assume that I shouldn't, when people tell me, oh, well, this isn't how we do things, mm-hmm. right? Which is really code for they were trained properly and obviously I wasn't. In the old days of my thinking, I would have been like, I would have went home and been like, yeah, they're right. I got to really work on this. But now I know very specifically that when you say things like that to me, the only answer I need to give you is, and still we're on the same playing field. And still we're in the same position and still we work together. So obviously I'm doing something right. That's it. I'm not doing this false equivalency with you anymore. I'm not doing this, have I earned my spot? I'm here. And that's that. And anything that you're doing to make sure that more people like me don't get here is blocking progress. Mm-hmm. That's that. My job now is not just to represent for myself. It's the door is open. I should be letting other people know. I should be letting other people know, hey, there's a job available.
Yeah.
Or hey, they need a team member. Or, hey, like I say that all the time, when you have a job or you have an opportunity and you know something's up or you know somebody asks you, you know, off book, like, hey, we're looking for somebody. Are you digging further into your network than your friends? Because mm-hmm. I don't just recommend my friends for jobs. I recommend talented people that I've encountered, that I have relationships with, you know, that I'm now building community within podcasting. Not everybody's my friend, but if you're talented and you need a shot, or at least, you know, the least I can do is help get you in the door.
Yeah.
Everything else is on you. I can't get you a job, but I can get you an opportunity to interview for a job. Mm-hmm. And if you're not doing that, it's kind of crap. Yeah. So long story short, the survey is ongoing because what we want to do is a second round. We actually want to dig into and do focus groups with the people that we talk to. I would love to get some more understanding. To be honest, I would love to be able to even talk to the group of, you know, of individuals, you know, the white participants we had, to unpack a little bit of that, like, how easily they said they didn't have other issues. Because I do want to understand that, because I actually am not going to be able to do some of the things I want to do in this industry if the prevailing thought is, it's not a problem. I just need more people to listen.
Yeah. Well, you see it in politics too, right? Like a lot of, especially white people, don't care about things that don't affect them. You know, it doesn't even occur to them. And if it does, they are able to shove it off because their life is unaffected when it comes to like the world that we live in. But no, I really love that you're making the space for women, for BIPOC individuals. I think it's so important because you're carving out something that is so needed and the space for it is there. And I just am so happy that you're like, I don't know, your work is very important. So thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Well, I appreciate that you give me the opportunity to discuss it. Everybody knows, I discuss it at the drop of a hat, but I love being the opportunity to actually hold space with people, and especially when people are receptive to it. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, after the 500th panel of being like, what's it like to be a person of color in podcasting? You're like, okay,
right?
How about this?
Yeah.
how about we stop doing this and we actually start doing something that's like tangible and can get people in the door
exactly.
instead of having everyone come watch me repeat the same 10 talking points yeah. I have on every panel. That's like,
really?
It does sometimes have to do with who you know and your circumstance and what you end up with, because these arenas are notoriously kept from people of color. You can't just go learn Pro Tools.
Exactly.
Everything costs money.
Well, honestly, that's I'm trying now to like push on that as much as I can too, because I think part of the mission for me being a true independent podcaster is we got to learn how to leverage everything. Mm-hmm. Like there's a Jay-Z song in the line is like, you know, they're building walls and we're building tunnels. Like mm-hmm. that's what I got to do. So I started to ask real questions of other people outside of podcasting. I'm like, okay, like how would I even learn Pro Tools? And so this will blow your mind. A friend of mine who's a librarian, who low key are like right behind teachers. Librarians are like the thread, the fabric holding this whole place together. Mm-hmm. They're just amazing humans. And whatever my next life is, I want to be a librarian. She said, well, you know, the library has LinkedIn Learning. And I was like, what do you mean? She goes, well, I mean, if you get a digital, you know, membership to the library, they have access to LinkedIn Learning. It used to be called Lynda. And I was like, yeah, I know what it is. She goes, well, there's Pro Tools tutorials on there.
Wow.
So if you have a library card, it's free.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah. She goes, and I know there's some other softwares on there. I don't know all of them, but I know there's other like professional softwares on there. So all of a sudden I was telling everybody and their mom, get a library card.
Yeah.
Get a library card. And then people were like starting to reach out to me and they were like, well, I live in this state and we don't have access to that. And then she took it a step further. She said, well, you know, most states have like a small fee you can pay to be a library member out of state.
Oh,
so like in Virginia, you pay $50 and you can now be a part of the Virginia public library system and access their digital tools. And if they have it, then you can use it. Same. And
go.
So, I mean, now I'm like, wait a minute, let's start connecting the dots, right? What are all of these things? Where is the free learning? Where are the tutorials? You know, where are the understandings? Where are the, you know, the folks who like, no, who are the really good teachers and stuff out there that are sharing stuff like this? Like that's becoming part of my like extension of this work is how can I connect you to as many resources that are free or low cost as possible? How can I make sure if you have questions, you can get those questions answered? How can I, like I have friends who are like independents who are now getting to be of a size. And I'm like, okay, well, if you're of a size and you need to move your operation to like a better platform, here's the person to go talk to. Talk to this person at this company. I think they can probably help you out. You're like right up their alley. They would love a company like yours. We got to start doing that. Like everybody's got to start doing that.
Yeah, I agree 100%. We agree. We got to wrap it up. But before we do, can you please tell our listeners where they can find you on the internet, where they can listen to you, all the good stuff?
So on the internet, it's very easy to find me. My name is Twyla Dang. It's always Twyla Dang. I always get my own handle everywhere. It's just both my names put together as one word. And I'm on all of the social medias. I'm not consistent, but I'm there. And then Matriarch Digital Media is everywhere on the socials, most likely under Matriarch DM, but also under Matriarch Digital Media in places like Instagram. We have a website, which is matriarchdm.com. And you can listen to all of our shows through the website. And we are also on and available on every major podcast platform. So as of a couple of days ago, Apple said I was available in 174 territories. So
nice.
You can find us. And if you want to know more about the actual shows, because we have a wide variety of shows that all speak to women and women's experiences, I would love it if you went to check out the website, learn more about the shows. You can listen right there, or you can use that as a jumping off point to moving forward. And we've got lots of other fun stuff going on. I also run a thing called Women in Podcasting. It's the second Sunday of every month on Twitter Spaces. 2 hours, no holds barred. You come and ask me anything you want to ask me about podcasting. I want you to learn. I want more women in the industry. I want us to eliminate the barriers that keep us from doing impactful work. And I do my best to provide that. So as long as I got breath in my body, I'll keep doing it.
Wow. Legend. You are such an inspiration and I'm so glad you exist. But yeah, everyone, go check out everything Twyla's up to. She's incredible, as you obviously know by now.
Yeah, and just to be clear, everything will be tagged below in the description, so you'll have No excuse.
But yeah, until next time, go follow Twyla and everything she does. You can follow us at Ethically Ambiguous, Ethically Amb, A-N-B on Twitter, Ethically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm just at Anna Hosting on Twitter. What a great episode, guys. I mean, if you're trying to get into podcasting, look, we want to help.
Yeah.
So sometimes you got to make the effort to find these things. So do that. Find Twyla. Follow her.
Yeah. Okay, bye.
And we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.